I'm excited to be here today. I'm on faculty at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, but I'm presenting this work on behalf of my colleagues, one of which is here in the room, Dr. Marjorie Givens, going to share with you the work that we've been doing to identify potential health impacts of proposed changes to the SNAP program. I want to begin by acknowledging that I have no relationships to disclose. So just to make sure we're all on the same page, I want to remind everyone that we have a U.S. Federal Farm Bill. The bill's reauthorized every 5 years. It establishes funding and programmatic foundation for our federal agriculture and nutrition programs. The 2008 Farm Bill expired September 30th, 2012. It was extended for 1 year, which then expired September 30th, 2013. And for those of you following the policy debate, you are aware that there was a conference committee last week and the bill is still being discussed. Title IV of the Farm Bill relates to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And for those of you who are less familiar with SNAP, SNAP is the government's principal mechanism for alleviating food insecurity and hunger, improving nutrition, and increasing the food purchasing power of low-income Americans. So federal spending for SNAP grew from $30 billion in fiscal year 2007 to over $80 billion in fiscal year 2012. This increase was due to several things. One, there was an increase by the president during the stimulus to increase benefits for family, which ended recently, just last week, that extra hour bump that we called it. We also know that there were changes to eligibility and participation. Different rules were imposed over that time, which also increased funding. And for those of you who are familiar with SNAP, we know that if you look historically, trends in SNAP show increases in SNAP spending whenever the economy goes down. So although these increases occurred, we would expect that as the economy improved, spending on SNAP to go down. So just to give you a little bit more information about SNAP, who receives SNAP? We know about 43 million people receive benefits each month. About 97% are households with net incomes at or below federal poverty level. We know that that's about 20 million households. A great majority of these households have children. More than half are headed by a single parent. About 35% of the households have an older adult or disabled person residing in that family. And we're not talking about a lot of money. On average, about $380. So think about your own grocery bill every week. We're talking about giving families $380 on average to buy food. And the length of time that somebody is on SNAP averages from 8 to 10 months. And again, we're not talking about somebody who's on SNAP for 10, 20 years. We're talking about a program that provides most often temporary assistance for people when they need it. So in 2012, there were changes proposed by the U.S. Congress to reduce spending on SNAP. You know, they wanted to bring down that $80 billion. And those changes related to modifying procedures for states to determine eligibility for the program and the amount of benefits that people received. It also included limit on assets, right? So you couldn't have assets more than $2,500. And this included money that you might put aside for burial, money for other things. You couldn't have more than a certain amount. As I said, the Farm Bill expired, so these changes that were proposed were reintroduced during the 2013 Congress. Again, the changes related to participation and to limits, but one of the things that we saw was that the House had proposals that would cut about $4 billion from SNAP. The Senate had proposals that would cut about $4 billion from SNAP, and the House actually in 2012 had cuts that were totaling around $20 billion, and in 2013 that amount went to $40 billion. So we're talking about a $4 billion cut in the Senate and a $40 billion cut in the House. So you imagine how challenging that might be to reconcile those two differences. With all that being said, our team at the Health Impact Project, which is a collaboration of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Pew Charitable Trust, embarked on a health impact assessment to try to determine the potential health effects of these changes to SNAP. So just to make sure we're all on the same page, so a health impact assessment uses an array of methods and stakeholder engagement to identify the potential positive and negative health effects of a proposed policy, program, or proposal. It also does it in a way that's very pragmatic, that provides decision makers with resources to help think about what it means for health in terms of the decisions they're making in non-health sectors. And so part of the very important part of the health impact assessment is the screening stage, so identifying a policy that we might look at. And so for the HIA, you might be thinking, well, why would we look at SNAP, right? Agriculture that relates to, that relates to health, right? Well, those of us in this room, we are here, we're public health people, and health effects of changes to SNAP might seem very obvious. But for individuals in Congress, they are less obvious. And so these are the reasons why, during that screening phase, we determined that we wanted to do an HIA of SNAP. One, it's a policy affecting vulnerable populations. We're talking about low-income individuals. We also know that nutrition and food insecurity are critical for this country's problems in terms of obesity and chronic diseases. There's also research that shows that SNAP indirectly contributes to the resources that low-income families have, right? So if you give families money to spend on food, that's less that they have to take out of their most often static income to cover other expenses. There's also research that shows that SNAP has positive impacts throughout the life course. So kids who are in families that receive SNAP have very positive outcomes as they grow into adults. And believe it or not, health issues were not part of the discussion for this bill. So our team felt that we can bring something to the policy discourse in this area. So we engaged multiple methods for our health impact assessment. The first was a policy analysis of the proposed bills. You're going to notice that when I present some of our key findings, that I'm not going to talk about the bill numbers, because the bill numbers changed over the years, but the concepts, the cuts, were very consistent across the time. We contracted with Mathematica Policy Research to do some quantitative analysis for us. We also conducted a systematic literature review of the health impacts on a variety of pathways. We looked at over 884 sources on our team, and we also conducted a series of interviews and focus groups to engage the stakeholders. This is a critical part of health impact assessments. We had an advisory committee made up of a variety of stakeholders from various sectors. We conducted key informant interviews with folks who are well into this debate, with other policy individuals that were knowledgeable about SNAP. We conducted key informant interviews with SNAP administrators at the state level. We also went on the ground and talked to SNAP participants to ask what these changes might mean for their lives. And we also spent time on the Hill visiting with congressional staffers. And we did that throughout the process because we knew that they were the decision makers. We needed to engage them up front to ask them what sources of data would be helpful for them in this debate. So our health impacts focused on four different pathways. The first was looking at food insecurity and the risk of certain illnesses such as diabetes. We also looked at how diet and nutrition and the risk of illnesses related to diabetes, obesity, heart disease, a variety of health outcomes. We focused a lot on poverty and budgeting for essentials. So we know that SNAP, again, is a resource for individuals of low-income households to help them shift their resources to purchase other necessary goods. So we looked to see what SNAP meant for individuals in terms of housing, home energy, medical care, being able to afford these essential goods. And finally, we looked at what the changes would mean for healthcare costs and program administration. This is a very simple pathway diagram. If you can imagine all of these issues, we had a very complex model. But when we went to the Hill, this is what we showed folks on Congress. And basically, just to walk you through what you're seeing, on the far left, those are the various proposals in the Farm Bill. We determined that these changes would have proximal impacts in terms of SNAP participation, eligibility, SNAP benefits amounts, access to SNAP resources such as the employment and training program, and other things, and that's all in blue. Those changes would then in turn have immediate effects, so in terms of people's access to consumption of healthy foods, for example, or food insecurity, and those intermediate effects are what you see in green. And in turn, those effects would lead to certain health outcomes. And we looked at cognitive development and behavioral health. We looked at obesity. We looked at asthma. We looked at anxiety and depression. We looked at self-reported health status. And those are all the outcomes you see in orange. So together, you might imagine, we had a lot of data. We ended up producing several reports along the way to share with Congress. And I'm just going to show you some key findings. There's a report you can access online to actually get at this to see what we looked at. But I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what we found and share some of the qualitative data in particular that we heard from SNAP participants. So the first thing I want to tell you is what we took a step back and we looked at the policy analysis to say, well, what does this mean for SNAP participants in terms of benefit levels and in terms of eligibility? So we estimated that as many as 2.7 million households or 5.1 million individuals could lose benefits based on the changes that were being made. For comparison, the U.S. Congressional Budget Office estimated that the changes would affect about 1.8 million individuals. So you might say that number is pretty far off from what we looked at, and I will say that our analysis used a data source that the USDA actually utilizes that includes assets. And because assets were being affected in the policy proposal, we use that. Hence, we had some higher numbers in terms of impact that we stand by. Because if you're going to propose changes to asset levels, it's important to look at the data that actually reports assets. We also estimated that the policy changes would reduce monthly benefits for about 304,000 SNAP households. These benefits would be a reduction of almost 7% of the household's monthly income. And these families all had net incomes below the poverty level, and most of them had either a child or a disabled adult or older family member living in their household. Again, vulnerable families that already are strapped for resources whose income are being reduced by these changes to SNAP. One of the particular policies in the House where we estimated 5.1 million people would lose eligibility, we looked closer at who comprised that 5.1 million, and we saw, again, about 83% of those individuals have their net income below the federal poverty level. And for those households that would become ineligible, they would lose on average about $228 in monthly benefits. Again, this is about 38% of their monthly income. I wanted to repeat those numbers again because they are so striking. So you see them again in the first 2 points. Again, 5.1 million individuals, changes reducing benefits of 304,000 households. We wanted to talk about the impacts on health, so we know that there were changes for food insecurity. SNAP reduces household food insecurity by 18% to 30%. And under the proposed changes, we estimated that about 500,000 food insecure individuals would lose their benefits, and as many as 300,000 newly ineligible people would become food insecure with these proposals in Congress. When SNAP benefits are counted as part of a person's income, receiving SNAP reduces the number of Americans in poverty by about 4%. So we took that number to say, well, what would that mean in terms of prevalence of diabetes, for example. So we looked at certain communities around the country, and we showed that that increase in poverty could translate to a growth of medical costs of about $15 billion over 10 years. One of the things that's really striking about that is that the Congressional Budget Office estimated that changes to SNAP would save about $20 billion. And so we're not making a direct causal relationship, but look at what we're saying here. CBO is saying we're going to make these cuts and save $20 billion, and we're saying if we were to look at these changes in poverty rates affecting diabetes, we would see an increase of $15 billion in medical costs, so nearly wiping out the savings that were projected. When we asked SNAP participants about these changes and what it might mean for their lives in terms of food insecurity, they talked with us about difficulties in getting enough to eat, mostly at the end of the month. They talked about how SNAP participants often skipped meals, consumed low-cost processed foods when they didn't have enough to eat. And we heard from parents and guardians of children how they often went hungry or skipped meals to ensure that their children were able to eat every month. We asked SNAP participants about diet and nutrition. Through our focus groups and interviews, we heard about access to healthy foods, most notably transportation, which we heard from our first presenter on WIC. We also heard about individuals having to travel to the closest stores because they didn't have transportation. And so they oftentimes consumed lower quality foods, and they would have preferred to have traveled farther away, but they couldn't get to those residences most often. We asked SNAP participants about financial hardships, and they reported that any changes to SNAP could really impact their household negatively. They talked about how when their SNAP benefits run out, they have to shift whatever limited resources they have at home to then have money for food or go to food pantries or food shelters. And as we all know, those resources are also decreasing. So people are hungry, they're having to make choices between rent, between paying electricity bills and buying food for their families. So in terms of our health impact assessment, of course, the thing that we wanted to say was don't cut SNAP, but that's not a feasible policy solution. And so we went ahead and looked to see how could we mitigate these effects in a way that would make sense for individuals. We talked about that change to assets, recommending that the asset limit would be raised from that $2,500 amount. We talked about how there will be these health effects, so how can we monitor them in a way that makes sense. And also, the administrators, I didn't present that data, but they talked about how these changes would affect their way of doing business. So how could we extend the phase-in period for some of those policy changes? In terms of the dissemination of our work, again, we did about 30 visits to Capitol Hill throughout the HIA. We shared the HIA findings at various time points. We did a briefing with the USDA. And we also sent an email summary to Congress with the highlights of these health effects while they were actively deliberating the Farm Bill. In terms of the initial impacts of our work, we feel that we successfully inserted health into the discussion. We developed some new relationships with the USDA and other stakeholders. I mentioned that asset part of the analysis that USDA has really incorporated into what they're doing. They weren't using the assets in the way that we did and really appreciated that yielded some different numbers. We developed relationships with legislative staff and got some good coverage in the media. So in terms of, I just want to acknowledge our colleagues on this. Again, funding for this project came from the Health Impact Project. This is the members of the team and some technical assistance was provided by individuals on the slide. If you want additional information, I direct you to our website. The report is there, and you can also send me an email. Happy to talk further during questions. So thank you very much.